And welcome to another edition of the Bundesliga Show. I'm Terry DeFellin from the Bundesbag, and I'm joined by John Hartley of the Bundesliga World. Hello, John. How's things?
Well, do you know something, Terry? I thought to myself, I was a bit depressed because I was thinking, God, you know, we're in the final week of the Bundesliga season and there's no goals going in and nobody's getting sent off and all this kind of stuff. And I went, oh, hang on. No, that's not the case, is it? It's absolutely amazing.
Indeed. We will be talking very, very shortly about this fantastic new methodology that's been adopted by the Bundesliga in just a few moments. Just to quickly tell you that later on the podcast, we'll be joined by European football journalist and one of the voices of Five Live, of World Football Phone in Andy Brassel. But before that, let's have a quick look at the final weekend and the last week of action. We've had the DFB Pokal and we've had the final weekend of the Bundesliga as well. And I think there's only really one place to start, isn't there, John? And that's at the Mercedes-Benz Arena. We saw two extraordinary games, one in the league on Sunday, and then again the following Wednesday, where Stuttgart and FC Bayern shared no less, was it 17 goals between them in over the two matches? John, what's your opinion on this radical new, quotes, non-defensive approach being spearheaded by these Bundesliga clubs?
Wow, God, blimey. Well, first of all, let's just say, how cracking were those two great games of football in the sense of just overall excitement of the amount of goals and red cards and toing and froing of the scoreline, etc., etc. But you are absolutely right. Some of the defending was absolutely appalling. And, I think last night in the Pokal, Matthias Delpierre, I think he had sort of the most up and down game of his life. You know, he scored one, he was the guy gave the ball away for one of the Stuttgart goals that they conceded, he got himself sent off. Blimey, it just had absolutely everything. But yeah, some crazy defending, some fantastic strikes and some crazy scorelines.
But my favourite part of the game, I think, actually, was when Khalid Boularouz was sent off. I've got that right. It was Khalid Boularouz.
It was, yeah.
And you've got Schweinsteiger, who's trying to kind of, I don't know, somehow mediate between him and, is it Florian Mayer was the referee?
I think it could have been Florian Mayer.
And he's trying to mediate between Boularouz and the referee. As if, I'm not quite sure whether or he's trying to say, look, you shouldn't send him off, or actually wasn't that bad. Because initially when he went down, he kind of waved his hand at the ref in a kind of, no, don't overreact kind of way. And then so this whole procedure went on in the exchange until finally Boularouz realised that, you know, the inevitable. And he had to get sent off. And in the end, I think Bruno Labbadia was shaking hands with Schweinsteiger in this exceptionally really bizarre and oddly German show of sportsmanship. It was a really strange thing. And I just thought, well, this game has got absolutely everything, with the obviously the exception of good defending.
Well, absolutely, and I think that we've said all season about, you know, how brittle the Bayern defence is, and well, everybody knows how brittle Stuttgart are. So putting these two up against each other was, you know, it was absolutely scintillating, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely going to be one of the great stories of the Bundesliga season will be this doubleheader between these two clubs. And just, another thing that occurred to me during the game was, I was thinking, well, crikey, if they make it 5-3, you know, how much, because you know about, you know, in-play betting, and you know, it's all about the in-play markets and all of that, you know, like Winston tells us all the time, you know, how many bets would there have been on a 5-3? When it got to like 3-3 or 4-3, I thought, well, how many bets would there have been on a 5-3 on doing that again? And, you know, and then Ribery pops up and makes it 6 right at the death.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I think that some bookies were relieved, to be perfectly honest, that
yeah,
got to that,
yeah,
because if some people did put those bets on, they would have been sort of pretty wiped out, really, wouldn't they?
They would have put, yeah. I mean, I would imagine that probably they'd have thought, well, look, hang on, we won't put too short an odds on the 5-3, but there would have been some payout if they'd have done it. And then suddenly, Yeah, Ribery pops up with an entirely gratuitous sixth goal. I mean, really and truly, it's like, at one point, it's like, look, you've beaten them. You know, look, you've beaten, do you have to score? Oh, yes, you do have to score another one.
And it Ribery's wasn't just that, it was just like, you have to score another one. You have to score a header. Hang on, Franck Ribery.
With his head, and there he is, he's running around pointing to his head. I mean, he's obviously, for reasons that are well documented, he's got injury problems and all kinds of sort of off the field shenanigans. He's got a lot to prove, Ribery, isn't he? And he's not going to miss an opportunity to score, especially if it's with his head. But John, I just wanted to very briefly talk about a little bit more dwelling on the defending in the Bundesliga general. I mean, Cologne had a shocker at the weekend, as it must be said, did San Pauli, and the game between San Pauli and Mainz. Which finished 4-2. There was definitely examples of poor defending, quite poor defending. I mean, do you think it's just the weather conditions? Maybe the pitches look really, really ugly there. And maybe, you know, they're just having a... I mean, the Bundesliga is quite liberal, you know, when it comes to defending. It's quite an attacking league. But, I mean, that weekend was quite shocking. Do you suppose it might have had something to do with, you know, just chonky pitches?
As you've already mentioned, that, you know, The Bundesliga is really known as an attacking league, and loads of goals. I mean, I think that there's two weekends in the last sort of month or so, there's been 36 goals scored on a weekend.
I have indeed.
So
that's right, yeah.
So there's absolutely truckloads of goals, and you're absolutely right, though. The pitches have been a bit of a terror. I mean, certainly in St. Pauli, it's been absolutely freezing. There's been a lot of snow. The pitch at the Millantor looked, you know, not in great shape, and you know, I think that even you could say at Stuttgart the other day, it you know, the pitch wasn't covered in snow, but it was certainly cutting up, and it was getting a bit more difficult. I thought that about Augsburg as well, against Schalke in the Pokal, and I tell you what, the Bayer Arena just it seems to be a snow magnet. you know, in the last few weeks, the game against Cologne, they were having to clear you know, snow off the pitch, and the, you know, again in the game at the weekend, of course, there was four goals in that one as well. So I think that there is a certain amount of the conditions coming into play. Yeah,
to an extent, yeah, I think we could probably say that. Well, why don't we move on to another fixture. We should talk about the leaders, Borussia Dortmund, because they lost. Now, I only saw the highlights of this match. They lost 1-0 Fanis Gekas goal in the 87th minute. As I say, I only saw the highlights of the game, so I'm not certain how well or how poorly they played, but the report seemed to suggest, even Jurgen Klopp sort of admitted that they were quite poor. I mean, do you think that they can shrug this one off and just move on, or do you think it might hang over them over the Christmas break? What do you reckon?
I think that they can certainly shrug this one off. I think that even to the point that, you know, it may have even happened exactly at the right time, because you're going into the winter break. Jurgen Klopp is not the kind of coach that allows his troops to become downhearted. You know, he's got a perfect situation now where they don't have another game for 3 weeks. Get them together, rebuild it. They've got another mini pre-season, and you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing them roar out of the blocks again come mid-January. I don't think that this is going to derail it. I certainly hope it doesn't. It's probably just the kick at the backside that they needed.
Yeah, they got knocked out. Obviously, they locked out of the Europa League in the week. Then I think they had to go to Seville, didn't they? And that would have been a tough journey. I mean, your interview with Phil Bonny was quite revealing in that they were probably given a bit of a rough ride there, because Sevilla were quite retrograde in some of their tactics, by all accounts. So that might have had an effect. Having said that, it's also worth bearing in mind that Barrios had two really good chances to score in that game. So, you know, it's a game, even though they played poorly, that Dortmund could conceivably have won. So what it does mean, of course, is it just ramps up a little bit of extra excitement for what will be the first game at the restart, which, of course, is the game at Leverkusen. Between Dortmund and Leverkusen, first and second, so that's going to be a game really, really worth looking forward to.
And not only that, with that particular game, if we remember rightly, then, you know, there are only two games that Leverkusen have lost in the league this season, and one of them was on the first day of the season against Leverkusen.
Indeed, yeah. Now, what will be interesting, of course, is if the history repeats itself and Dortmund, for some reason, lose that game. would it then be a question of then setting off this kind of spiral? Would, I mean, really what Dortmund need to do is they need to get a positive result from that one, then, you know, momentum is re-established, and frankly they can pin their ears back and head for the finish. Their lead is that commanding that they should really go on and win it now. But there is always going to be that little bit of element of doubt. And the fact that we have this break, yeah, it's a great chance for Klopp to get them together and do some work with them. But it also helps ratchet up the tension just a little bit for the rest of us. So it's fun and games, isn't it? I really can't wait for that one. Shall we just have a quick look before we move on to part two and our interview with Andy and look at Schalke's emergence from the depths? Impressive 3-0 win over Cologne. Another hat-trick for Raul. He's really settling in very nicely into the Bundesliga now, and it is good to see. Fantastic result for the Königsblauen, John, but some pretty shocking defending from Cologne, and as we've found out recently or the last few days, they're making some changes, aren't they?
Yeah, they are making some changes, and I think that it can only be a good thing. Unfortunately, one of my favourite players in the Bundesliga, Farid Mondragon, is off to pastures new to the MLS. He was the oldest player in the Bundesliga. You know, what a character he is. Mm. You know, he's absolutely fantastic. And Mikael Rensing's come
Mikael
in,
Rensing.
And I think that's an interesting signing in itself, because he could go one of two ways, really. He could be an absolute revelation, or he could sort of drop back into, you know, what we were seeing at Bayern that wasn't very good. But I think the thing with Rensing is that he hasn't been at a club, I don't think. Am I wrong in thinking this? He's just been sort of out of contract and training by himself.
I'm not certain, though. I mean, I don't even think he was even training at Bayern. I think he's gone. Presumably a small amount of sort of like getting yourself up to speed will be in order. But I mean, I'm working on the assumption that Rensing will be the Cologne's number one. But I don't know whether or not what that's based on. We'll have to find out. More changes as well at the top. Former Freiburg coach, legendary former Freiburg coach Volker Fink is now the general manager there. He's come from Urawa Red Diamonds, he's knows the Bundesliga inside out, doesn't he, John? So presumably he'll bring an awful lot of experience and an awful lot of contacts to Cologne.
Yeah, I think so. We were musing the other week that it might have been Oliver Kahn who might be filling this void. But Volker Finke, I think that he's got a real depth of knowledge about German football, and you know, he's been off in Japan as well, so he's well travelled in that respect. I've got a funny feeling that I read somewhere that he's not actually coming until February, but he's probably got his sort of fingers in pies and probably suggesting players that, you know, maybe should be arriving at the club. So I think it's positive that, you know, at least in Cologne they know who's coming in. They know it's somebody with a wealth of experience. So I think it can only be a good thing. And, you know, there's already talk about, you know, who Cologne are going to be bringing in the transfer window. So it could be all change for the Billy Goats, I think.
It would be interesting to see whether or not he brings anyone in from the J-League. And whether they prove to be as effective as Kagawa.
I mean, that would just be marvellous, wouldn't it? If if there are some more diamonds in the J League that he can bring over, if they're half as good, then that is a real benefit to the Bundesliga.
Well, maybe Finke will find another diamond from the Urawa Red Diamonds. I think I'll. All right, okay, quickly then, let's recap on the rest. It's worth pointing out that whatever that does happen there, they're going to need a bit of a bounce, because you should point out that obviously Cologne were locked out of the Pokal by Duisburg on Tuesday, Wednesday, wasn't it? So
yes.
Grim stuff going on there at the moment, but signs of, hopefully some signs of encouragement. Let's have a quick recap of the Bundesliga scores from the last weekend before we move on to part two. Borussia Mönchengladbach, pretty awful against Hamburg, 2-1. Werder Bremen losing again, this time to Kaiserslautern, 2-1. Wolfsburg, we're going to be talking about them any second now. Fighting back to get a draw against Hoffenheim. Dzeko with a last minute winner. Nuremberg beat Hannover. Fantastic result for Nuremberg against Hannover. And St. Pauli, we talked about before, losing 4-2 to Mainz. And then Bayer Leverkusen, second place team, a tough 2-2 draw with Freiburg. Right, that's it for part one. Part two, we will be joined by our guest, Andy Brassel. Well, joining us for part two of the Bundesliga show is Andy Brassel, European football reporter, journalist, and one of the voices of the World Football Phone-In. Welcome, Andy. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hello. It's a real pleasure to be here, Terry. Hello, Terry. Hello, John.
Hello, Andy.
Okay, well, what we're going to do is, first of all, I think we're going to talk about Wolfsburg. Obviously, they've had a terrible league season so far, in the start of the season, and made worse by their shock. Well, is it a shock? Shock exit to Cottbus. Third place, second Bundesliga side, Cottbus, last night, as we're talking now, 3-1. McLaren under all kinds of pressure there, Andy. I mean, how much do you think of their problems is down specifically to him, or do you think that there's other stuff going on there?
Well, I don't think he's really helped himself. I think it's always a difficult case of sort of dealing with so much pressure to do with the money they've spent and the players they've got. I think trying to integrate Diego into the side has been complicated. It's been a really, really tricky one. And you know, they were a side that were built around really solid virtues when they won the Bundesliga back in 2009. Now, obviously, it was difficult when Magath left and Armin Wey. I don't think any sort of Bundesliga follower would suggest he's one of the best managers on the scene. But you know, really, I think a sort of back to basics thing would have suited them, and that's not what they've had. They've not really had that sort of stability. They've struggled when they've had Josué out of the team, who's obviously been a linchpin for them. The fact that Maximovic has moved on has been something very complicated as well, because obviously he works so well with Dzeko and Grafić. And the whole midfield has looked really imbalanced. Obviously, they've let in a lot of goals, and this was a problem last season as well, particularly at home. But the fact that Kjær has had to adapt whilst not having Friedrich next to him because he's been injured has been a problem. So obviously, you have to look at these injuries. But you know, I think McLaren has really struggled to find that balance in midfield. To make them the whole team work fluently, and B, to really protect the defence. Those have been the biggest two problems for him.
Well, I think Friedrich is due back in the new year. And I mean, having said that, inevitably it's going to take time, because he's only played one game for them, I think. And, you know, inevitably it's going to take time for that partnership to settle. So it could well be well into the summer season, if you like, before Wolfsburg's defence really starts to settle. Do you think that, it's transpired that McLaren's job is safe, at least for the time being, which assumes, therefore, that they're not going to sack him between now and the restart? Otherwise, why would they say his job is safe? So, I mean, do you think that they've done the right thing there? I mean, what's your instinctive feeling about McLaren? I mean, would you think that if in given time he'll get it right? Or do you think that maybe it's just a busted flush and they should have maybe got rid of him?
Well, I'm hopeful for him. I'd like to think they've stuck with him because they know he's a good coach. Because, frankly, even like anyone who's the most ardent England fan must know that McLaren is a really good coach. But the problem he always had with England is getting respect off the very best players. Now, this has been a recurring theme, I think, if you look at Wolfsburg over the last couple of months. You know, when Diego got subbed against Schalke, he walked straight past McLaren, ignoring his invitation to shake hands. Dzeko did the same a week or two ago and had to apologise, it has to be said, rather unconvincingly in public. So people are going to start asking, has he lost the dressing room when he's getting snubbed by the biggest players? And, you know, you have to wonder if this is a recurring problem in McLaren's coaching career. He's obviously an innovative coach. He obviously knows what he's doing. But at Twente, you know, he didn't have so many big names. Even their best players, players like Theo Janssen, Brian Ruiz, who was sort of making their name in the Bundesliga. Whereas guys like Grafic, Dzeko, Diego, they've been there and done it.
Yeah, they've got nothing to prove, have they? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's got to be a question mark over that. Going back to the Friedrich thing, I think the plus, of course, he was on the bench unused against Hoffenheim on Saturday. I think the winter break's come at just the right time because it's almost like a mini pre-season for him. He can sort of get up to speed. Everyone will be starting afresh again in mid-January. And maybe he can work on stuff with Kier. Maybe they can reintegrate Josue in front of them, and maybe that's a solid base they can build from.
I think, Andy, I was just got a question really about the whole situation. So, like, do you think that you've spoken about McLaren's potential failings, but at Wolfsburg as a club, do you think that there's sort of too many elephants in the room, as it were? You've got Dieter Hernes, who's such a big character, and a team that has had great success, you know, in winning the Bundesliga in under Felix Magath. Do you think that since Magath's left, there's just been this void left, and you know, there's just a battle for power in that space?
I think that's a really good point. And I think maybe that's something, that sort of power struggle, as you say, John, is quite Bayern-esque, isn't it, really? So that's something, obviously, that Magath has been through before. So maybe after winning the league, obviously, he had the lure of a very big contract at Schalke, of a load of transfer funds, which obviously didn't transpire to be there when he arrived. But nevertheless, it seemed a logical enough jump for him at the time. And, you know, even going into the Champions League, he felt maybe he'd done all he could at Wolfsburg, and he didn't want to get dragged into that same sort of power struggle again. Now, going back to what we were saying about McLaren before, in one sense, he should complement that sort of situation quite nicely, because he's not about sort of, you know, swinging his big balls around. He's about coaching the team. And so if he's in a situation where he's going to get on with that, that's great. If he's in a situation where he has to impose his will, maybe it's a bit more difficult for him. And I think you have to look at some of the signings and think, are these players that were foisted upon him? You know, obviously after winning the Bundesliga, integrating new problems, it's a problem that Wolfsburg have had before, you know. And when they had that great run at the end of 2008, 2009 that led to them winning the title, they were picking the same team every week. Whereas, you know, at the start of 2009, 2010 season, they brought in players like Thomas Carlenberg, like Karim Ziani, like Obafemi Martins, who were like fine players on paper, but contributed next to nothing to the team. And they've just been a complete waste of cash. All they've sought to do, really, is like all they've served to do is put more pressure on the coach and just sort of breed discontent in the squad. Because if you've got players who are feeling like spare parts, I mean, that's not good for anyone. And the best managers are managers who can make everyone feel involved. Now, maybe this winter transfer window is an opportunity for McLaren. He's already moved on Martins. Maybe he can work on maybe moving on Karim Ziani, who's obviously a big earner as well. He could maybe get him away back to France. And maybe this is a chance where he can make a break. But getting his proper first 11, what he thinks is his actual first 11, on paper is just a key thing for him. Because I think if you go back, like the last game, the last full 90 minutes I saw Wolfsburg play was against Schalke about a month ago. And the whole balance of the team, it was just a total shambles. You had Dejaga playing on the left wing, which, you know, with the best will in the world, he tried so hard, but he's a striker, and he was expected to perform defensive duties there, especially, of course, you've got Diego in the middle too. You know, he's not someone who's going to track back all the time. And, of course, Dejaga ended up making a terrible challenge and getting himself sent off. So he needs that reference point as far as the first team goes, some sort of solidity so they can build from there. Because, really, I think he needs, I think, a Europa League place if he's going to save himself.
Do you also think, Andy, that potentially with the likes of Dzeko there, do you think that it'd actually be beneficial to Wolfsburg if Dzeko did leave in this transfer window and he's out of the way, because he's even overshadowed McLaren's arrival at the club, the summer talk of whether or not Dzeko's coming or going, and the transfer of Diego also overshadowed it as well. You know it's so much being placed on these transfers that he has no chance to actually, you know, mould the team that he actually wants.
Agreed. And I think, as far as like going back to what we were talking about the question of him possibly losing the dressing room, if Dzeko isn't 100% happy, he's a big personality, he's such a big player for them, that is clearly going to have a massive effect on them. Now, I think as well that the fact that if Dzeko does go, they're not got that sort of almost pressure to play Dzeko and Fiete all the time, because of course they're such a central part of their success. If they don't have to play 4-4-2 or 4-1-3-2 all the time, then, you know, maybe that's a situation in which Diego can start having more of an influence, because obviously he's had a relatively difficult adaptation. Now, I think what we've got to focus on all around this is McLaren is someone who, given a chance to get on with his coaching, is someone who can really command the respect of the team. I was talking to Sheikh Tiote, Newcastle United's training ground yesterday, who's obviously with him at Twente last season, and I was asking him what he thought was maybe the problem with McLaren at Wolfsburg, and he said, "Well, I don't really know, because I'm not inside his head, but he did emphasise that he was a really great manager while he was at Twente." And I said, "Well, you know, this is a guy who didn't pick you as a starter for the second half of the season." He said, "Well, you know, that's just the way it was. You know, he was someone who got across very clearly what he wanted to do with the team, what his plan was, and I wasn't always in it. You know, I understand the coach has to do what he has to do, and he made it clear that all the squad was pulling in the direction, pulling in the same direction to make it happen and to make us successful." Now, I don't get the impression yet that McLaren has really communicated what he's trying to do at Wolfsburg. The players seem unsure, and that's something he's got to get over. So I mean, he's got 3 or 4 weeks to do it. So this is really the big chance to make or break his spell.
It occurs to me, Andy, that what he's got to do is he's got to get Diego on side, if that's the case, because Diego's going nowhere. I mean, Grafic and Dzeko, you could argue, certainly Dzeko will almost certainly be gone, we're told, not this winter, but almost certainly in the summer. Grafic could easily go, but Diego has just arrived, and he is a big gun and going to be a big presence in that dressing room. If McLaren can win him over and get him on side, then maybe there's definitely a future for him. Or do you think that his best strategy would be, certainly in terms of dressing room control, would be to, you know, try and rebuild the team around Diego? Or do you think that that's too much of a risk to do that for such a player who, as you say, doesn't necessarily track back? He's a, you know, fantastic player going forward, but maybe doesn't have the qualities for you to build a team around. What do you reckon to that?
Well, as you say, Terry, I think making him feel a central part of it, of course, why wouldn't you? They spend so much money on him. That's got to be a key part. And like I said, for me, I don't think it worked with two strikers and Diego behind. It just leaves the defence too exposed. You know, they've got lots of attacking players in wide positions that are going to leave space behind them. The likes of Schaefer is someone who likes to come forward, so you know, that's a difficulty for them, and that's why I think, I mean, in an ideal world where everyone was happy to stay and Dzeko was happy to stay forever, he would be the ideal guy to play up front on his own, with Diego just off him. Whether that can work out, I think is dubious. But certainly for the rest of the season, that's something that could work if he's not going to go in January. And if, say, maybe that would mean that a feature was the one to move on. But certainly a situation in which they can get the best out of Diego. I mean, basically, if they can do that, he'll feel good about himself. He'll feel happy. McLaren will have him on side. And that's off.
Yeah, and suddenly the job's that much easier, isn't it? Yeah, for him. Well, I mean, I think we all probably, you know, wish Steve well. We're all quite keen to see how you know, an English coach can get on in the Bundesliga, in the hope that perhaps he acts as something of a standard bearer. So I'm sure we wish him well. John, was there anything else that you wanted to ask Andy while we've got him here?
Well, I think that Andy, as always, has pretty much covered it. You know, really and truly, as always, as you know, whenever you listen to Andy, he hits it right on the nail.
Couldn't
right on the
more.
Head.
Okay, well then, we'll knock it on the head for then. And thank you very much, Andy, for taking time out. I know it's just before Christmas, and I hope you have a fantastic festive season. I understand you're off to St James's Park on Boxing Day. Is that right?
I certainly am, so I'll get a bit of Jerome Boateng in there.
Good stuff. We'll look forward to hearing about that the next time that we see you. Thanks very much for coming on the show. I hope you come back again, and have a Merry Christmas.
Absolutely, pleasure. Merry Christmas to you too, and I look forward to coming back.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much. Welcome back. Let's quickly run through those DFB Pokal results that we haven't talked about before we leave you for the year. Augsburg 0, Schalke 1. Schalke continue. Hoffenheim beat Borussia Mönchengladbach, who isn't these days, 2-0, that was the score. And Aachen, congratulations to them. Penalty shootout win over Eintracht Frankfurt. So a fantastic achievement for Aachen. And they go through to the semi-finals, isn't it, John?
Is it quarterfinals?
I think they go through the quarterfinals. Yeah, something like
quarterfinals.
Something like that.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we're probably getting close to the end of the podcast. I think we should probably wrap things up quite soon. But I think what we'll do is maybe we'll have some mindless predictions. What do you reckon?
We do them so well.
Actually, can I just say that I tweeted on my personal account. I tweeted that I thought that Wolfsburg would get unstuck by Coppers. And I was mocked roundly. All right, I wasn't mocked. I was just told by one person that I thought I was wrong. But, you know, I mean, for me, I feel vindicated now. So, you know, I am the predictions god. Ask me anything, and I will tell you what's going to happen.
Delve into that crystal ball.
Yeah, shall we?
Well,
judging by what you've seen so far, who do you think is going to win the Bundesliga?
Well, let me take it. Just pluck a random name out of the air. Borussia Dortmund.
Do you reckon?
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, we did. I mean, with fairness, we touched on this in part one, didn't we? The defeat to Frankfurt is almost certainly just a blip. But they do have that game against Leverkusen. And if they trip up there, then it's possible that it could set off a bad run. But they've got to lose so many games in order to actually lose the title that you just can't see it happening. They've got to lose quite a few, drop quite a lot of points in order to lose that. So I think I'm going to agree with you there. That is not a terribly controversial prediction. I don't think you'll get very particularly long odds on Dortmund winning the title. Where do you think Bayern are going to finish, though?
Now, this is the real question, I think, in the Bundesliga this season. I honestly think that they're going to slide into second place because I think that, well, anything less than... I'm not just going to say that. I think they're going to slide into second place and they're going to win the Pokal. I think that sort of rescues their season from being in such a low place to coming second, being in an automatic Champions League spot and winning the Pokal. I think that from where we've been earlier on in the season, that's almost like success for Bayern.
I agree with you about the Pokal. I think that they will win that. I also agree with you about second place. I think that they will slide in there, and I think they'll celebrate second place as though they've won the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. They even might pour oversized glasses of beer over their heads like they do normally.
They may, for all you know, they'll end the season with a big lap of honour. There'll be ticker tape. There'll be foam suds everywhere, beer suds everywhere, and you'd think, my God, Bayern, fantastic, they won the title again. But actually, they didn't, because that's actually going to be Dortmund winning, because that's the way Bayern roll is, and it's what's got them where they are. So fair play to them. Now, John, who do you think is going down this season?
Now, this is the bit I really hate talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Borussia Mönchengladbach will go down, and that isn't so much of a controversial thing to say, and probably neither of the two that I'm going to follow up with. I think that Stuttgart will have the Bruno bounce, as we discussed last week, and unfortunately I have a funny feeling that my two favourite clubs in the Bundesliga, I think Cologne and St. Pauli, are going to take the drop, and it really pains me to say that. It's gonna take some fixing in the winter break.
Yeah, I mean, it's also looking at the other relegation contenders. I mean, you look down there. You've got Stuttgart, who if nothing else can score goals. If the last two games, last three games has proved anything, against the Europa League, against, was it OB they played, and they won 5-0. You know, they scored 11 goals in the last three games. Just sort of also happened to have conceded 11 as well. But if they can sort that out, then they'll be up there. Bremen, you just can't see going down. You can't see Wolfsburg going down. I mean, it's possible Nuremberg and Kaiserslautern could go on bad runs. But you feel that they've got enough about them.
I think that those two teams have got more about them. Kaiserslautern, they've got some real talent in that squad that have shone already this season, and I think that Lakic and Ilicevic can fire them fire them up the table, just keep them where they are at least. Werder Bremen, I think that they'll buy somebody who will save them.
Yeah, well, conceivably, yeah. Or they'll just, you know, recover from some of their injury problems and just gradually move their way up. Certainly, Lakic Lakic is a class player, and I wonder if he'll be with Lauten next season. At St. Pauli, I mean, I watched the game against Mainz, and they were just, I'm sorry to say it, John, but they were dreadful. I just despaired at some of their defending, even when it was 3-2 and they were going for that equaliser, and you thought, well, you know, obviously they're going to play, put men forward to go for that equaliser, and I can't remember the name of the player it was, but he lumps the ball up, and again, this is something that teams do, and fair enough, but it was such an aimless lump up the field that it arrived straight at the feet of a Mainz player, and within seconds they were 4-2 down, and you just thought, well
it was at the goalkeeper, Matthias Hein, who lumped it up, I think, and it landed at the feet of a Mainz player.
But either way, it was just such unfocused play, given what they are up against, and fair enough to push forward. But you just thought, well, it's just so unfocused that you just can't see them turning it around. And I'm not certain about Cologne, but looking at the other contenders, I'm assuming that we are obviously Gladbach. I watched the game against Hamburg, and they were in control for the first half. I just couldn't score a goal, and then just, well, didn't so much evaporate because they equalised. But I mean, they're just, their confidence must be just absolutely brittle. So it's hard to see them. It's hard to see them staying in the division, which is a shame because I've got a bit of a soft spot for Gladbach, and I think any chap of a certain age has as well. Because
any chap who puts Günter Netzer up as the picture for this podcast.
That tells you all you need to know about how I particularly feel about them. Anyway, I think we should stop because we've probably waffled on, well, I've certainly waffled on long enough. So before we all rush down to the bookies with our predictions, let's just confirm that the Bundesliga show will probably be back in the new year to catch up with what's going on over the winter break, have a brief look ahead to the restart of the season, including that big game that we mentioned between Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen. You can contact the show in a number of different ways, via Twitter. I am Bundesbag and John is Bundesliga World. We have an email address, which is bundesligashow@footballfairground.com. And I think that's it, isn't it? We haven't got, there's no other organs Are there anything like that? Any other outlets? No, I don't think so. So until then, from John and myself, thanks very much for all your kind words. Have a happy Winterval, and we'll see you on the other side. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.